Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What? Yeah. Now I'm... Yeah, I'm behaving myself. No, I'm not playing in abandoned buildings. What? Again? Now. I suppose you had those people follow me again. Fine. Hey. This is Jimmy Farrow from Monty and the Farrow, and I want to thank all our subscribers. We have now passed 14,000. On our YouTube channel. But I want to ask our subscribers to take the next step for us and become a full-fledged member of Monty and the Farrow. Yeah, that's right, folks. There's three different levels to choose from. There's free shirts. There's free autographs. Just check it out and become a member of Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty and the Farrow. Later.
All right, welcome to Long Island's number one pro wrestler broadcast, Monty and the Farrow, only seen here out of Indie Music TV, straight out of Ronkonkoma, Long Island, on a special Wednesday show where, bro,
yeah,
this is Backlund-esque.
Yeah, it is.
The icon,
yeah.
Johnny Rods.
Yep.
I cannot wait. But first, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. on high alert after warning of imminent Iranian attack. Saudi Arabia has shared intelligence to the U.S., warning of imminent attack from Iran on targets in the kingdom, putting the American military and others in the Middle East to elevated alert status. I don't want to go too deep into it. Everybody knows what's going on, and I feel like a real jerk off saying this, but I'm going to say it.
What?
What does that mean for the pay-per-view Saturday? I'm serious.
There's more important things to worry about. You're right.
Right.
What about the pay-per-view?
I can't believe I'm bringing it up, but...
Yeah, well, you know what? I always see... I got to be honest. When I see situations like this, what's the first thing you think of? I'll tell you what the first thing I think of is...
What do you think of?
The safety of those guys going over there.
Absolutely.
Right away, I'm worried, you know, because at any given moment, and you wonder if it ever will happen, has a celebrity ever been taken hostage from another country? Like, you know, I don't...
It's a good question.
I don't think so.
That's a very good question.
So could you just imagine what would happen if, God forbid... They, you know, seized a few WWE superstars. Could you imagine?
I could imagine.
I mean, just imagine any celebrity of any kind.
But so, the reality of it, safety. We're looking at World War.
Yeah, well, more importantly, you had to bring up the pay-per-view. But more importantly, by the way, United Nations have anything to say about this? I mean, how long have we been trying to keep Iran, compliant? How long, Mike? Our whole
Quite
lifetime?
A while.
Our whole lifetime?
The whole lifetime.
Is that safe to say?
Yep.
So what does the UN have to say about this? Anything?
I haven't
heard.
They
got anything to say about it?
I haven't heard.
You know what else worries me a little bit? It's kind of strange, but yes, we are tied businessly with Saudi Arabia, but our president, to be honest, has not been exactly warm towards them either. So this is a very interesting and potentially...
He hasn't been warm towards anybody.
Right, this is true. Extremely, well, it seems to be at least.
I know the previous president was.
Previous president, I don't think that they
were... Be careful. Tread lightly.
Yeah,
guys,
you know
we still
what?
Are suspended, yeah, just know, so you know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here, but anyways, hi.
Keep it that way.
Yeah, let's keep it that way. Yeah, I really have no comment. How's that sound?
Is Little
that
Patty says, hi, Jimmy and Mike. Glad to see you back. Little Patty, thank you. Appreciate it. Luce in the house. Phil's in the house.
Mr.
We got Mitch
Phil.
In the house.
Luce.
Who else we got hanging out here on this Wednesday?
What is going on, one and all?
What is going on, one
and
all? So anyway, convalescing.
Yeah,
I returned, you know, returned to work today or yesterday. Actually, working from home, but I go physically. It's all right.
It's all right.
But I saw a documentary today while I was working, and it was called "The Inside the Jerry Falwell." Falwell? What was it?
Falwell. Jerry Falwell.
Love triangle. Pool boy tells all. So it's this pool boy.
Pool boy.
Who Falwell's wife, who you can see on there, pretty good looking lady.
Huh.
Hits on this pool boy,
yeah.
And Jerry likes to watch. And this goes on for years and years and years.
Jerry likes to watch.
And
when they go for a dip? I mean, in the pool?
They go for a dip. They
okay,
do a lot
gotcha.
Of dipping. They
I
do a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
you know, Falwell eventually became very entwined with former President Trump.
Okay.
And eventually the world finds out that this was going on. And there's a lot of other incriminating things that went on, too. But what would you think... Is it such a big deal that a guy watches while his wife gets banged from another guy?
Personally, I would rather not even know about it at all. How's that sound? Who cares? I mean, but wait a minute. Isn't he...
Brian Starr says, where's Johnny Rods? Johnny Rods is coming
he's,
on.
He's coming. He's
this
coming.
Is a television show, sir. This is not just a straight shoot interview, okay?
Yeah, opening monologue.
Okay,
know,
we have a monologue.
Have
we have
tonight show.
Sponsors we have to talk about. We have commercials.
Yeah.
And then the icon will be there.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a straight interview, by all means, go over to Hannibal's channel and watch him interview Fritz von Erich. All right? Thank you.
Wait a minute.
Anyway, go ahead.
Interview Fritz von Erich.
Not Fritz von Erich. Lance von Erich.
That must have been a very silent kind of interview there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, I mean, I guess this is the price Falwell pays for being a public public figure. And that's the way it goes. Personally, I don't give a damn what he does with his spare time as far as the kicks he gets out of whatever, watching, whatever. I guess that's
honestly don't think it's a bad deal. And she was a pretty good looking lady too.
Yeah, well, if you say so.
Anyway, to the right of me is the star of the show, Mr. Jimmy Farrow. Jimmy, along with his partner Bart Griggs, make up the band Wisteria Hall.
Bart Man!
Wisteria Hall makes such great songs as My Dreams, This Life, Not Far Behind, Here Comes a Rain, and the Monty and the Farrow theme song, Riding High.
Uh-huh.
Please go to the Wisteria Hall YouTube page, hit like and subscribe. Go to Spotify, iTunes, or Reverb Nation, or where music can be downloaded. And please support this incredible band.
Thank you.
Monty and the Farrow can be seen on YouTube, the Monty and the Farrow page, where over 2 million viewers have seen their show. Monty and the Farrow Facebook Live page, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Anchor, Twitch TV, Monty and the Farrow page. And the new cable contract has been signed, and Channel 115 every Wednesday at 7 p.m. and then Saturday at 11 a.m.
Did I get my carton of Twinkies? That was one of the things that was holding this deal
you
up.
You did, yep.
Nice.
That's coming.
Sugar Rush.
Channel 20 at 8 p.m. So
okay.
Those are the new. Please log in and remember that. We want to thank Amazon Music for allowing us to be on their platform.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with one of the all-time greats. I am... so happy to have this legend on this show. We said Bob Backlund-esque.
Yeah, man.
The unpredictable
Johnny Rods.
After this commercial.
Joe LeCue style.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence. Collision Specialists. 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here, and if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com. That's B-U-I-E Homes.com. Or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. BenBuie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Tell him Wolfie sent you. Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee.
That's right, folks. Canine Corral for all your dog daycare and overnight care. Call 631-549-1544. That's 631-549-1544.
Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What? No, I mean I need a dumpster. Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics. Pride, performance, and partnerships. And Nitro's Garage for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
In the mood for a freshly roasted cup of coffee? www.offtherailscoffeeroasters.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Johnny Rods.
Johnny!
You see me now, right?
I see you
I
now.
See
I see you.
Now.
Don't move that camera.
Don't move that
just
camera.
Don't move that right camera. Right you look beautiful.
Right no, I'm just right putting it down. I'm holding it. I got to put it down.
Yo, Johnny, you look like you're 50 or 40 years old, brother.
Listen, guys, listen. I'm sorry, but whatever reason... I kept getting it and losing it at the same time. Every time I got it, I lost it again.
Hey, maybe if my name was Bradshaw, things would be different.
No, listen. Listen. that happened with Briscoe 2 weeks ago. They kept having a problem. And then all of a sudden, we were okay. But what happened was I was having a problem with my phone And my daughter said, let me try my phone. And the freaking thing, bingo, nope, the same shit and came out. Now, I guess, I don't know, maybe it's a shitty fucking phone.
Well, right now, it looks right good. Now, it looks stay good. Steady.
Stay steady.
And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, I don't see you guys. I only see me.
All right, well, that's good enough. Right, well, you're not missing enough. Anything.
Yeah, you're better anything. Off. Yeah, you're better off. Ugly.
We're kind of ugly.
Well, how come there's a way I can see you, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and I don't. I don't only see myself
with it right now. I don't want to lose you.
I don't want to lose you.
You don't want to lose me.
Yeah, and the fans can see you.
It's nice if I see you guys' expressions.
Well, you know what? I could pop
you
up.
I could pop you up on
my camera.
I saw you guys before. I saw both of you guys, and I didn't see me. Now I only see me, and that's it.
Well, let me ask you: who's the better looking guy? The bald guy or the guy?
No. You guys. You guys are the best.
No, you're the best.
No, you're the best.
All right, Johnny.
All right, Johnny.
You're originally from Puerto Rico, correct?
You're originally from Puerto Rico, correct?
Yeah, definitely. All the way.
So how does someone become a professional wrestler coming from Puerto Rico? Was this a dream or did you just roll into it?
Well, coming from Puerto Rico doesn't stop you from being a wrestler. It's who knows? Puerto Rico has all kinds of athletes, but in the sense of anything. But, I mean, when I came here, I was 11 and a half, and I have no idea I'm going to be anything – especially a wrestler. So starting the point about being a wrestler, when I was young, you know, 13, 14, I was already doing a little boxing and trying to do a little judo because I joined the judo club and trying to do, you know, I never played baseball or basketball. Well, I did a little bit in junior high, but I never liked ball playing. I always loved the fighting sports or whatever the heck is, wrestling and all the other stuff, you know?
Were you happy to be moved out of Puerto Rico at the age?
That's a rough age.
That's a
rough age. 11 and a half. What are you like? Towards junior high?
Well, look.
Happy to come here?
11 and a half. It doesn't matter what age you are. I was born up in the hills of Puerto Rico, way up in the hills with guys. I come from where there is no light, no electricity, no running water, no gas, no nothing. You're up with the Indians, way up in the hills. That's where I was born. I mean, I'm not. There's no shame in saying I'm a hillbilly. I'm a hillbilly, born in the hills of Puerto Rico and raised in the concrete jungle here in Little Italy, in New York.
Nice. So Johnny, how do you break it to your parents so you're going to become a professional wrestler?
You don't break it. It doesn't happen. You grow over here from 11 and a half. By the time you get out, actually, how can I finish school at 11 and a half? I've never been into school except for a month in Puerto Rico, and they took me out and brought me here. And at the age of 12, they put me in the fourth grade. How the heck do you learn your ABCs in English? And how do you start to speak English? How do you start to do anything like timetables? You could call yourself a dummy, but that's not your fault because you never been to school until that time. So from there on, you continue. You're trying to learn English. You're trying to learn you're trying to learn something. By the time you're 15, 16, 17, you're already in junior high. And what do? Your grades are moronic. You got nothing to. There's nothing that you know that is anything special. Like my grandson right now, he goes around saying ABC all day long. He's singing it right to the end. Oh, I know my ABC, and I look at him. And I said, look at that. He's not even four. He already knows how to use the tablet.
How old you were when you decided you were going to get into professional wrestling? I mean, is this during high school?
Actually, you don't decide. It happens where you do things. You know, I did jiu-jitsu when I was 14, 15. And, you know, the real jiu-jitsu, the Chinatown jiu-jitsu with my friend who was the super son who was already 18 and He used to use me for a punching bag, but, you know, you learn the hard way sometime. And then did a little bit of boxing, you know, because I wanted to get into boxing. But my mother never let me, and I hide around. And then I did a little amateur wrestling, the YMCA and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And when we first got our first Dumont round TV with the antenna, and all my mother watched was boxing and wrestling, and she was a fanatic of wrestling, and we're all fanatic of wrestling. And then you start to like it, and you become a fan, and then you keep going, and before you know, you're involved. You know, my way of learning pro wrestling was not like the elite guys that come from the. From the north and the south and all these big states that football players, Olympic wrestlers, whatever the heck you want to call them, and they come with the elite name, you know. I'm from the, like I said, from the hills of Puerto Rico, from the concrete jungle of New York, and you know, real hardcore. And you're lucky to knock on the door and you get a chance to get in. And before you know, you're involved with pro wrestling.
You started in 65, I believe.
No, 1963. My fourth match in 1963 was in the old Madison Square Garden when Bruno took the belt from Buddy Rogers in about 3 minutes. Wow. And that night, I was called in by Arnold Skoll and told me, come and bring your bag. You might do a substitute. And Bruno brought a guy from Pittsburgh, about 300-something pound, and about 6'2", 6'3". He was a state trooper, friends of Bruno. And I worked with him in the garden for 15 minutes. Shit, that was my first win in the garden. And in 15 minutes, they put me over. So that was my fourth shot in pro wrestling. Wow. My first one was Comac Lorena. The second one was in Sunnyside Garden, and the third one was in Trenton, New Jersey, and the fourth one was in the Garden. And from there on, the rest is history.
Your first match was at the Comac Arena.
Was at the Comac Arena. Is that what you're telling me?
Yep. Wow. The first match with Don McLaugherty.
That's our childhood arena. That's our childhood arena. We went there all the time during the
late '70s and '80s. Yeah, I was there.
Were you in awe
of Bruno? When you first saw Bruno Sammartino?
What about it?
Were you in awe of him? What was your vibe the first time you looked at him? Like, wow, did you know right
away? Bruno Sammartino? Nothing. No. Put it this way. I told you before that when you're a fan, you're a fan. Until you break out of it after you've been in the business for a while. And knowing Bruno being at that time, My first superstars that was like Antonino Rocco and Miguel Perez and Ricky Starrs and the Graham Brothers and Skoll Murphy and Ruben Ond and all those characters that were, you know, big shots in at that time. But when you become one and you're sitting in the same dressing room with these monsters, you're starstruck, you know. But you're walking around just thinking that you're like them, you know, your chest is up, your arms are up, even though they're not big enough. You're lucky. You want to get a cauliflower ear or something. I don't know. When God puts you in a spot, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. That's what happened to me, you know.
What kind of person was Bruno?
What kind of person
if you
was
can
Bruno?
Share with us.
Bruno was always a gentleman, a scholar. Bruno was always a good guy. Bruno was. The years I spent in my business, I was friends with Bruno, Dominic DiNucci, Cicluna, all those names that I'm mentioning. We're all pals from the beginning I started to they die.
Thoughts on Buddy Rogers?
Thoughts on Buddy Rogers
as a person?
Buddy Rogers, no problem. And then he was here in the beginning. He was away, and then he came back, and we're still pals.
Did you notice any heat
considering
you were there that night?
You were there
between
that
Buddy
night,
and Bruno.
Between Buddy and Bruno.
Well, the heat that they when put it this way, I told Jerry Briscoe just a couple of weeks back, the same thing. I was in the dressing room like a fly on the wall, sitting there, because it's my first time and just a rookie. And I heard loud noises in the other room, but I won't dare to go over there and check because it's none of my business. I was just sitting in the corner somewhere waiting for going on the, I think it was the second match of the third that I wrestled. And then I just sat there, waiting for to see what goes on. And I heard the commotion, but it wasn't nothing that it was my business. I didn't think it was a fight or anything like that. Then they come out to go to the arena, and everybody looks like everybody is sneaky following. I said, well, if everybody's following to see, and go out to the hall and look between the curtains, and you can see the ring, and you can see, you hear the belt. They announce the name, you hear the belt, and 3 minutes later, then the winner is Bruno Sammartino. Mm. So you wonder, wow, well, that was a fast match.
That went quick.
That's what I thought. But they come back to the dressing room. Everybody goes following back to the dressing room, and I could see that everybody was doing it. But I stayed watching the rest of the matches because I was too dumb to know that there was a shoot. But it was a shoot because they probably said, as far as I know, is that they probably told Roger, you know, let's work this out and run the belt. But Roger probably just wanted to be a draw or disqualification or something like that. And he didn't want to drop it. So they probably said, okay, no problem. We go to disqualification. But they suck them. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Bruno was having none of it.
And that's how it happened. That's how it happened after I know many years later, I know the truth because that's what it happened. But I want to tell you from the beginning that I know anything else, it wasn't true, you know?
Right. How did you meet the great Vince McMahon Sr.?
Vince McMahon Sr. Once you get started, you really don't meet Vince McMahon Sr. until you go to the Garden. And the first time I met him is that same night that we're talking about that deal there. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, he's always around in the big arenas in the Garden and in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, you know, places like that, maybe Boston. Any big arena that there was running through the month or whatever, Vince McMahon Sr. would show up nice, and he was a gentleman and a scholar, you know?
So his reputation precedes him. We hear nothing but good things about Sr. So he treated you well then,
Johnny.
Well, yeah, put it this way. I'm trying to tell you that I'm just a kid from the hills of Puerto Rico and raised here in Little Italy or down the east side there, and then not having the elite education that everybody else comes in with, you know, through all these years, and they put them over and everybody's a trademark or whatever bullshit it is. I'm proud of myself that I tangle with Tom and Dick and Harry, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I'm still here. And not only still here, but I'm teaching guys in my club the way the real game's supposed to be for them to be pros if they want to stay in the business, not to be doing independent shows and jumping all over the place and doing all kinds of high spot. The age of 18, 19, 20 to the 40s, and then they think that they're stars and they got wife and kids and something like that, and then they break their neck, they break their arms, they crack their ribs, and by the time they're 50, 55, they haven't got into the business, and then they think they're pro wrestlers, and that's not the game.
Well, you are an icon, Johnny.
You are an icon,
you've
Johnny.
Built so many,
well,
built
yeah,
so
thank
many
you.
People.
You know, thanks a lot, guys. You know, I'm sorry that we have a little problem with the pressing of the fingers, this thing. I know you guys are watching me right now, right? Am I touching my head?
This is incredible.
Okay,
this
so
incredible.
See, I'd love to see you guys. For some reason, I see the background here with curtains and stuff like that, but For some reason, I didn't get you guys, and yet you got me.
I'm gonna say
before you stop me. I get pressed all I want, and if I don't know the right keys or the right bullshit with this magic stuff that's going on with the phones and all this technology, you cannot blame an 81-year-old-and-a-half character. Yeah, because let me explain something to you. When we did the thing with Jack, and they're supposed to be good at it, and they got one of the best podcasts that I've seen so far, we also had a problem, and it wasn't me. I kept trying my phone, and then my daughter said, "Let's try my phone." And then all I did is put it on bingo, and it popped in a split second, and it was perfect all the way through. And now, maybe it's the recession with my phone. It's a good phone, but
everything is working. Everything's working fine.
Everything's working fine.
Yeah, Johnny. But it took a freaking half. It took a freaking half an hour,
and I'm ready to buy. I'm
ready to put it on the floor and stomp on it.
Johnny, do me a favor. Compare senior and junior.
Comparing? There's no comparing. Junior, as far as I'm concerned, he can put his tights on, his boots on, and stand in front of me in Madison Square Garden, and I'll beat him in about 60 seconds. And I swear to God, they don't take me long to have him on the floor in 60 seconds, maybe less, because it only takes me, I'm good enough still to hear his in the beersholes, if you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could kick him so hard that he'll forget his name.
What makes you want to kick him so hard, if I can ask?
Because he's no class for comparing to his father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I don't like him. There's nothing about liking. It's that he ruined the business for Tom and Dick and Harry, who I don't, like I said before, there's a lot of kids and a lot of people who love the business. They want to get in it. And this guy took the world and turned it into for himself like a Hitler. And now it's all them. It's in that. It has no, there is no other promoters.
Johnny, someone with class was Arnold Skolan. Can you tell us about your relationship?
Yeah, well, Arnold Skolan was the booker of the control of Vince number one man running the towns and you know for years, and then Angelo Zaboldi came in behind, and then Tommy, Dick and Harry and Gorilla Monsoon came behind, and then Jay Strombo came behind, and you know they had a slew of them, and then when Junior started to become involved, he also, you know, he was just waiting for his father to die so he could come in with his big shit, you know.
Was he rude to you when he took over?
Not rude, and not rude. He's not. It's not that he's rude. That I don't have nothing elite that he thinks that I'm supposed to be taken care of, you know. Otherwise, they don't think that way. They want their boys, you know. I hate to talk like this, but to them, you're not freaking body. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was Hogan one of the reasons you may look at wrestling?
You follow me?
No, I follow you.
It sounds like I'm angry or some. No, I'm not. They get used to when they don't have no respect in the sense that without me you're not going to have nobody to be put over, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then when you put people over, you put them over with heart, and not with hate, you know what I'm saying? Because it's the business, it's not them and it's not you, it's a freaking business the way the business is. And the business is a great, great game. It's a beautiful game. It's a pro game, if you know how to do a pro.
Does Hogan symbolize?
Does Hogan symbolize
Vince McMahon's changing of the business to you,
or
is Hogan okay in your eyes?
Is Hogan okay in your eyes?
Him changing the business?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he changed the business. He said he was going to do it. He said, "I'm going to bring this Universal." He did. I mean, he's been now. He promoted every. Who promotes in Arabia? Who promotes in India?
Right.
Nobody ever. They have wrestling in those countries, but it's not our kind of wrestling.
Right.
The Indians they wrestle on the beach, and the Hindu been wrestling all the centuries. So it's in Arabia. So it's in Greek. So it's everywhere else. But when Vince was doing here, and every promoter in every state were doing beautiful, and wrestling was beautiful. Every state had beautiful talent, and they share the wrestlers. They come back and forth to different states, and everything was so great. And now he just took it and he slapped everybody in the face and took the power and went and put TV in everybody else's territory and spit on everybody and did whatever he has to do. He couldn't care less. Like I said, he's a Hitler.
You wrestled a lot of big cards.
You
wrestled against
Excuse me? You wrestled a lot of big cards. I wrestled Tom and Dick and Harry. I wrestled Tom and Dick and Harry that came in to try to see if they're going to make it, for them to use it to make them a star so that we can make money. So who else is better than me to know what to do with a freaking guy to make him look good? I could go in the ring with you right now and make you look like $1 million.
You could. Ring the bell.
Yes, I can. Honest to God, I got the kind of mind. You go in the ring, as long as you're inside the square circle, I don't care if you're young or old or what. Well, look at this. You're welcome to come down to the gym, Gleason's gym, anytime. And watch what I do with a 6'3", 6'4", 250-pound guy from Virginia, cowboy, and hear what the old man can do with him, and you're not going to believe it. So if I could do that now, imagine what I could do when I was 40, 50, or 60.
Oh, yeah. Johnny, I remember you.
Everybody looks at you just because you're 245 pounds and you don't come from the I don't know where the all those colleges out of there, and they got that background bullshit, and they come, they put them over, and everybody's supposed to believe that. So they believe it. That's the business. So that's good. But I don't have that. I have the raw and the one and only, the unpredictable one. And I'm not unpredictable. Vince, my man, used to say that. Junior, he said, "Oh, you know, Bruno, look at this guy. He's the one and only. He's an unpredictable one. We never know what this guy's going to come up with." Well, he enjoyed every minute of me. That's why he called me unpredictable. So from there on, that's all it is, the unpredictable one. What the heck do I do in the ring? Whatever comes to mind, I'm going to put it out. People like it, hate it, doesn't matter. That makes me number one.
I remember you wrestling Ivan Putski at Shea Stadium.
Oh, Ivan Putski. I could eat him with my eyes closed. He was just a put-over guy. I don't have nothing against the man. He's okay. Just that they put him over and he believe it. And when I work with him, and if you're gonna count 1, 2, 3, and after I finish, I'm on the floor, and you're gonna put your foot on top of me and raise your arm, I'll kill you. Mm. I definitely will kill you.
So you ever
I would get up and
him?
I would be fired. I'm going to leave because I'm going to fucking tear you apart. You know why? Because I'm a man. You cover me and you beat me. That's it. It's all over. But if you beat me because they want, you're going over, not because you beat me. The hell with you. Hulk Hogan, weighs 300 pounds and 6'6", and whatever. He could blow up too, just as good as any little guy.
Johnny.
And besides, that's not the challenge. I'm not challenging nobody. I'm a regular professional worker. That's it.
Johnny, in the 70s and early 80s. Did you ever go to Studio 54, Plato's Retreat? And if you did, do you have any stories?
The Studio 54? No, I never went there.
Okay.
I know you're talking about Plato's Retreat. That was a hangout place, you know.
The boys used to go there, though, right?
The boys used to go there, though, right?
Well, yeah, because I don't know. As far as I know, the boys go all over the place. Who went there? I have no idea. Maybe I don't know. I don't know. Studio 54. I don't know what kind of hangout that was.
Well, who did you run with in the 70s?
Who did you run with in the 70s?
Everybody. I mean, from Bruno Sammartino to Andre the Giant. Anybody. Remember, I was one of the boys, so it didn't matter. We have no, hey, mommy, you want to come here and say hello to the guys?
Yeah, have her come in.
Yeah, come here.
I don't look good.
You don't have to. It's a business.
Johnny, what are you doing to her?
Hello,
mommy. How are you?
Who am I talking to?
Well, you're talking to Monty LaFaro.
For some reason, we have the same problem. she came down. Hey. She came down to get a drink.
Jay Will says you have a beautiful house.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, sweetheart.
Take care.
She's upstairs, and she came down to get some kind of drink. And so she's passing by. That's why I said hello. The last time it was my daughter. And you see the stairs behind. So she walked down the steps, and then she was crawling down the floor, and I could see her back. She didn't want to be seen on the thing. So that was with Jack and JBL. I had a nice time with them. You know, I was able to talk about a lot of stuff. Not even 20%, but you know. Right. You could ask all kinds of questions, and I got all kinds of answers. It just depends on how I could tell you the truth about
it. We got
it, you know?
More coming, Johnny, so coming, be prepared. Johnny, so
oh, yeah, prepared. Yeah, yeah. You know, you ask how you start. That's simple. You like it. I did it. And I wasn't able to. Listen, I went to Chelsea Automotive over here by the Holland Tunnel at the age of 17 and a half or so. Oh, they jumped me from junior high to there. My grades, I still don't know the alphabets, okay?
What?
I don't know the alphabets. I know a little bit, but I could spell a little bit. I could write a little bit. I could write in Spanish a little bit. I could write in English a little bit. But guys, if you're not in school, you're in school at the age of 12, and they put you in the fourth grade at the age of 12, and you don't even speak English, how the heck can you learn anything?
I don't know, but you got a nice house.
The
house got nothing to do with it. I work hard. I used to work for the Mail Delivery Union for the New York Post and the New York Times. Okay. You know, I had my own route. So I was able to.
Tito Santana that job? Because he told us he was delivering newspapers,
didn't he? Yeah, nah. Not him. Davey O'Hanlon. Davey O'Hanlon gave him the. He didn't do it. He tried.
Okay. Johnny, you lasted in the.
The guys that work in the newspaper was me first, Cicluna second, DiNucci third, SD June fourth, Pete Sanchez fifth. Manuel Soto fifth, and Pete Sanchez sixth. And we all work because Davey O'Hanlon was and his father's business agents, and they got us into the business. You know, Irish Davey O'Hanlon.
Sure.
And Irish Davey O'Hanlon, I've been friends with him for more than 50 years.
Johnny, how did you survive 20 years in the territory days? Did Vince ever let you out? To like other places?
No, he doesn't have to let me out. Whenever they needed to put somebody in a certain spot, like in Toronto or Montreal or anywhere that something was going on, that they needed something to explode, I wind up there for a week or two. I went to Carolina just to help the TV. So Vince says, Johnny, we're to Carolina. And and work on the TV for the week. So I go over there and I work with Wahoo McDaniel and I work with Ric Flair, put them over, and they go over like $1 million. They don't have freaking bodies to put nobody over in those days. It's very rare. They take a guy, they put him over, and after your guy don't like it, he'll probably leave because he feels like he doesn't want to do no job. With me, it don't matter. I go to Canada, I go to Texas, I go over here. Only because it's a special week or two, and that's it. I go to Japan for 5 weeks. I was there 5 times, but that's the best deal you could get because you're going to work for Baba and the other guy and things like that. My biggest count was when I went to California to do Jabber Rook. Well, that was in 1976, at the end of 76. I told Jerry that joke there. We did Philadelphia TV, and we went to Reading, Pennsylvania to do the second TV. And you know Hamburg, the Reading. We used to stay there at the hotel in the Crystal Room. And Vince used to go over there and sit with Big Shots to eat steaks in the Crystal Room restaurant while we're running around eating pizza and hot dog. And I was there one night, and Mike LaBelle and Gene LaBelle in California had the Sheik, the original Sheik, there for quite a while. But because at the beginning he was drawing like a firecracker, but after a while, you know how he drew. They did the cut all the time. There was always blood. Every match they did, every main event, it was blood, right? Mm-hmm. So after a while, how much blood can the people see? So the houses weren't not coming up at all. But yet they like his gimmick, but they don't like the idea that the house is going down because people got tired of looking at the same shit all the time. So Mike LaBelle asked Vince, you think maybe we could get Johnny over here and do the Jabber Rook thing, the gimmick, you know, like they are. I was hanging around the hotel, and Ernie the Cat Lat was with Vince. And Vince says, if you see Johnny down the hallway somewhere, tell him I want to see him, because that was the night he was there. And he wanted to ask me if I want to go to California and be the next Sheik while they got rid of the other guy. I told him, yeah, the money's good. In 1976, I want $1,500 a week. If I could get $1,500 a week and support my family in New York and then be able to do that, I'd be glad to do it, because then they're going to do the 22-man Battle Royale. I'm going to win it. You're the biggest thing in the wrestling business for a year. You know, you follow that?
So, Johnny, they told you you were going to win that Battle Royal.
Of course.
That Battle Royal was won by Bruno and Andre in previous years, correct?
The Battle Royale, everybody in hell that is in the business, that is a big, some kind of name or some kind of something, winds up there for 22 men. Every year there's a 22 men. That's the biggest. That was WrestleMania in those years. Right. There was no WrestleMania. Right.
So Johnny,
the 22 men Battle Royale belonged to the Olympic Auditorium with Mike LaBelle and Gene LaBelle.
Johnny, I want to read some of the names that won that Battle Royal. Harley Race. Rocky Johnson. Bruno Sammartino. Andre the Giant. Toro Tanaka. Hector Guerrero. Mando Guerrero. And the great Andre the Giant. So you're in a good class.
Well, I won it in 1976.
Yep.
Johnny, Why did that not last?
And then I came back because they messed with my money.
Okay.
And I left them.
Oh.
I came back home to Vince. Okay. And then in 1977, I had to go back, and they did another one for 77. And then I think Harry Piper won it, somebody won it. And that was it. They start playing with the money that I wanted. The biggest match that I did while I was with them was in San Francisco for them with the Cowboy.
Bob Orton?
No.
Tom Pritchard?
The Funk.
Pritchard?
Funk.
Oh. Terry Funk or Dory
Funk? Dory Funk Jr., yes.
Dory Funk.
I wrestled with him for 15, 20 minutes for Roy Shire. And that was the biggest payoff I got ever that I got because of who I was. And I came back to California. I was in California. I was from San Francisco. But they messed with my money, so I dropped them. I dropped them. I came back home. And then I had to go back in 77, and Vince said, go back and help me fix the bridge. And I went back, fixed the bridge for him, and I came back home. But I was the winner for the 76 total.
Johnny, how did you come up with the Java Rook name?
Very simple. That was Tony Newberry, the Mongol. Remember the Mongol?
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Vito and Ghetto, the Mongol. Remember when he brought Bruno Sammartino's territory and Bruno Soldin the territory in Pittsburgh, the TV? And it's all a story. When Tony was here years ago, and then he was 240 pounds, and you know he's my size, and he wasn't a big jabroni. He was not. So he was here. He was making just preliminary money. He wasn't making big money. And one day we're in Washington D.C. and it was a horrible trip, and we came back to New York. And I'm sitting in the back with him. I forgot who was driving. Probably Tomas Marin was driving, and Pete Sanchez on the front. And we're in the back, and he was pissed because we went there, and it was a horrible thing. The house was a shit, and all we got is like $35 or whatever. And he was cursing, you're making no money, all this bullshit. I'm going to go. Do this. I'm going to make money and buy Bruno Sammartino's territory one day. I said, hey, Tony, when you do that, don't forget me. Don't forget to book me in your show and make me some money. So, funny thing, I'm only joking. I think he's joking. And he went away for 5 years, and he come back as the Mongols, and he made nothing but money here for Vince. And he did buy the territory for $65,000. And then he's... one day we're in Pittsburgh doing TV. We were in Pittsburgh to do a couple of shows, and we're going to do TV, and he wants to put me on, but he doesn't want to put me on as Johnny Rods because I've been there as Johnny Rods, and it's not hot enough. He says, maybe you could do an Arab gimmick. So, but I'm there, and I don't have no Arab get up. So I cut up a bed sheet and four ways, and I made this gimmick, and I took a piece of red thing and put it around my neck, my head, and I made the name Java Rook, and then I went in the ring and woo 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 woo, and I wrestled Tony Marino, Batman, and we had a little scraffle where they had a separators, and that's the born of Java Rook.
You actually wrestled Batman.
Yeah, what do you mean? I must have wrestled him. I don't know, 25 times that guy. Every time I went to Pittsburgh, I wrestled him all over the place.
Please tell the
Batman,
fans.
Batman tell the and, fans. And I wrestled the his partner. What the heck is the other guy? Batman and Robin.
You wrestled Robin.
Of course, I wrestle everybody.
That's hilarious.
Michael, I wrestle anybody you can mention.
Not only did you wrestle anyone that I mentioned, you also made the career of so many. One being Roddy Piper. Can you share the story on how you made Roddy Piper?
Roddy Piper.
He couldn't even get the drink down.
Roddy's my man. No, I'm drinking a little, what do you call it?
Hooch?
I had some fish, and I'm drinking some pink Moscato,
Oh, I like pink Moscato.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just to relax us. I was out with my wife with the baby, And we went shopping something, and over here we go to the market. Is I live in Staten Island, you know, it's crazy over here.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, tell us about Piper. Well, you were there for the beginning.
And then, let me tell you, I got back at 6 o'clock. My wife says, "I want shrimps and I want sweet potato and bacon and this and that." And I started cooking. I'm a good cook.
Shrimps?
And then all of a sudden, we're looking at us. Oh, gee! And then you call. I said, "Boy, I'm glad I finished on time."
Yeah.
Well, Roddy Piper was a Canadian kid, and he came. He the age of 14, 15, 16, or 17. He was in Canada doing bumps and, you know, getting little shots here and there. And whoever helped him, I don't know. I knew, but I forgot. And then somehow at the age of 18 or something like that, he escaped through Oregon because he's a Canadian with no visa. And his sister was already married to somebody and lived in Oregon. So, you know where Oregon is. It's down that way. And he escaped from Canada into Oregon, stay with his sister. From there, he went and got connection to play a little bit through there and all the way to California. And by the time I got in California, he was there for, I guess, for a year or half a year. I don't know. They were giving him half a year visas, you know. And he really wasn't making money, making $600, $700, maybe $1,000, you know. And young guy like that, and running around with Ye York and all those guys, by the time it's payday next Tuesday, when we get paid, he probably broke, you know, because, you know, he's young, drinking beer, you know, jumping around. And he wasn't really a big star or nothing. He was just a regular worker, whatever they say have. And then I come in, they put me over. I have no manager. I have nothing going on. I'm just by myself. And I decided to, I saw him with a good, whenever he did promos or something, he had a good mouth on him and he had the flute. So I said to him, well, I live in the same place with him, you know, different room, but in the same hotel in Santa Monica. And I said, brother, I said, you know, it'll be nice if I could talk to these son of a guns in the office and make you come with me with the flute and control the Arab. You know, the Arab is crazy. You could control them. And he thought it was a good idea. So I said, let's go to the office and talk to them. I went to the office and they said, nah, you know, he's a baby face. We're going to do this with you. We're going to get your girl to do the smoke and all that shit. This is 1 week. The next week, I did the same thing with him. The same bullshit. Nah, you know, we're trying to figure it out. Da da da, maybe. But then the third week, they said, come on down, guys, come on down about 10 o'clock to the office. We want to talk to you. We actually thought something was wrong. We go to the office. Hey, we got a great idea. You know the cigarette sign they used to say, I'd rather switch than fight with the Winston cigarette, mm-hmm. with the cowboy, with the black guy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but so the booker, I forget his name now. He says, Tom Ernesto, I think is his name. So he says, you know, we got a great idea, Piper. This week, TV, you're going to work with Rook. And it's 3 minutes. The bell ring. Rook, you beat the shit out of him. You fucking run out of the ring, grab the mic, and you tell everybody, the hell with it. I don't want to wrestle this guy. I want to control this Arab. I want to be his manager. I'm going to make, and then the people stopped booing, and we thought it was a great, so we told them, oh, it's a great idea. And we went back to the hotel and we got drunk because it wasn't not their idea. It was my idea, but that they wanted it and they said that it was their idea, so we took it. And from there on, we were hot as a firecracker. We even got shot at Bakersfield and Lancaster when we worked over there with Chavo and all his boys. Chavo was hot because he was champion, and we had the Mexicans were shooting at us. You could hear the bullets in the bleachers. So we got hot as a firecracker, but then they were playing with my money, and I told them, if you play with my money, I'm going to go back home. I'm not going to give you I'll give you 2 weeks or 3 weeks notice, and you don't do it. Then I took my shoes and the hell with it, and I came back. And then Vince says, you know, you got 77, you got to go back and fix my bridge. I say, okay, Vince, no problem. I have no problem with Vince. And that's how Brady Piper started to shit. When I went back in 77, he had a brand new convertible Chevy Impala, red and black, and he was making money, and he was a big shot. The rest is history. And, you know, Piper was a hell of a worker.
You remain close with him in the years later?
Piper, and I never had a problem. He's a good guy, you know, a happy-go-lucky Scotsman, you know?
He left us too soon.
That's for sure.
Johnny, how about Eddie Mansfield? You came across him in California. Were you pissed off?
Eddie Mansfield was a guy like so many. When I was in 77, when I went back, in 77, again, for Vince to fix the bridge, he was there, and then him and I stay in the same hotel, in the same room, the same suite, you know, together, until I was there for a couple of weeks, and he was with me, and that's where I met him, and I introduced him to a girl in Brooklyn that was friends with my wife. Her sister was friends with my wife from school and everything. And he wound up getting married with this girl. So that's how far I go back with him.
How about his 2012?
And then the rest is history, because it was the only time connection after that I ever talked to him again, because he's a Floridian, and I guess that's where he lives and that's where he's at.
Were you angry with him revealing trade secrets in the business?
No. I never. That shit doesn't bother me. That bullshit about secret. What kind of secret? look at today. Vince says it was entertainment.
So can I say this? And I don't want to be offensive, but I never found Eddie Mansfield to be a good worker. was he a good worker? Because
look, you're a gentleman, a scholar. You're a gentleman and scholar that says the truth, and the truth is the truth. Yes, you're right. He's what you call
lame.
A makeup star. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Right.
He's a redneck from Florida. I don't know. I guess Florida. Okay. And he has sometimes he doesn't have no class. You know, in the sense of how he is. So, me, I had no problem with the guy. I mean, we stayed together for a couple of weeks, and then he walked. he's a wannabe superstar, you know what I'm saying?
Can I ask you that?
There is no fault on that. Everybody wants to be a superstar, but right. there is such a thing as character, you know?
But he always claims he used to sell out arenas. I never found him to be that guy.
He's going to sell out his ass. I mean, I don't want to talk about the guy brought him up, but whatever he says about arenas and sell out, maybe he sold out some arena. You know, there's arenas that hold 2,000 people, and if they put you over as a main event, you sell them out. I have done that. I work with Roddy Piper up in Massachusetts, where we have worked in a high spot, and I forget the name of the town. That place was packed, and then the whole idea was for me to work with him, and then when he puts on the sleeper behind me, Dr. D. David Scholl walks in, supposed to knock him from the back, and we're supposed to come back on the dang. And the place was sold out. I never brag about it, and it was with me. So they put me with Bob Backlund, and the place is sold out. So then I sold out. It wasn't Madison Square Garden, but you're looking at maybe 9,000, 10,000 people in the arena. So that's a sellout. But I never brag about or sell out, and they put you there. You sell out because you're a worker, and then you got the champion and the guy that the such, and then they work an angle. And Dr. D's supposed to come in, hit him from behind, and then we're supposed to come back in the tag or some kind of shit that they did. But somebody walk in the ring at the same time, this shit never happened because. Some fan jump in the ring after Dr. D, and we have to beat the hell out of him before we forgot about the whole setup.
Oh, man.
And the second match never happened.
Who the hell's going after Donald?
So you see, sure, you could work in some town and sell out and talk about it, and why not? He's got the right to say whatever he wants. Probably he did, and probably he didn't. Right. I can't say anything because I have no idea. I mean, I was in Puerto Rico being the super medic, remember?
Yeah, tag team champions.
And then we sold out the stadium, the baseball stadium.
Gotcha.
Me and Jose Estrada against the Invaders and all those guys. Well, let me explain something to you. We're not the only one. When they have a stadium like that, they have Tommy, Dick, and Harry in the card. But yet we are the main eventers, so we could say we sold out. But how can we sell out? We got other people in the card. So it's a group of characters that the people want to see. And I was hotter than the firecracker. And there's nobody ever going to take my place in Puerto Rico as a super medic. They try, but they can never get anybody that they can make the heat that I did. Jose Estrada is there. He's my compadre. And him and I were the hottest. I left. He put his son, they got other people, and they never were able to bring it back because it wasn't me. It depends on the work, you know. It depends on the kind of heat you're going to put on. I don't know. I don't know what kind of worker I am. All I know that I go in the ring and I'm going to make, either I'm going to piss you off or I'm going to make you love me, one of the two. What about you? You love me, Michael? You love me?
I love you. I love me some Johnny Rod.
Can we ask him about this? Go ahead. Johnny, we were lucky enough to see you and Jose Estrada close a Madison Square Garden show for the tag team belt against Fuji and Saito, and the whole place was rooting for you guys. Do you remember this? Go ahead, say no.
Of course I did. That's not the only place we did it. That's not the only place we work. We work in a lot of places. We work with Tony Gurria and what's
Rick
his
Martel.
Name? The other guy
Martel.
There.
Rick Martel.
All this Tony Gurria. Tony Gurria was a hell of a worker. He was one guy that I could work with my eyes closed. Never had a problem with him. He's a super nice guy. A great baby face. He had every freaking tag team matches champion that they could give him. And then I work with him all the time, different towns are here, whether it's Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, all over, Baltimore, Pennsylvania. Me and Jose work with those guys all over the place, and we tore the house down. Why not? Jose Estrada used to be a security guy in the school in Brooklyn because he was a soldier and a veteran, and he got that kind of job, and he was jumping around the Mickey Mouse local show. I brought him to TV with me so we could do TV. I brought the Johnny Rivera. I brought the Steve King. I brought J.C. Rodriguez. I want to tell you how
Steve
S.D. Jones.
Steve King.
S.D. Jones was born. You want me to tell you?
Yeah. Special delivery.
Special delivery.
One day, way back, I was a worker, and Gypsy Rodriguez, who had a little Mickey Mouse stuff in the Bronx that hold about 60 people, said, "Johnny, man, maybe you could help us out, you know, if you come down to the Bronx and work a little bit on our show." I said, "Well, look, I could go there and work on the show, but I'm going to do make-believe like I'm an Arab or something." Actually, I wasn't even Ja Rule. I just make-believe I was. Those hicks over there didn't know nothing. So they say, "Who do you want to work?" And they got about five guys, four Puerto Ricans and S.D. Jones. But he wasn't S.D. Jones. He was Mike Ephraim Conrad. So the thing is, they say, "Who do you want to work?" I saw him. He was a little taller and looked bigger, about 245 pounds. And I said, "How about the black fellow?" And he says, "Oh, he don't know nothing. The Puerto Rican guys are all looking to work with me." So I said, no, I want to work with him." "Ah, come on." I said, no, I want to work with him. I work with him. No problem. I did the match. I do my own match. The thing is that he turns around And he says, you know, maybe you can help me. I want to get into the business. I said, look, I have a little basement workout where I live with weights, you know, heavy weights. And then I have a 14 by 14 ropes or tying on the poles with a couple of mats on the floor. I help a few guys there for a little money so we could pay the basement, you know, so we could work out. I said, you come, you paid for the the 2 months, and then I help you a little bit. So he did. He come down to the low, you know, downtown. He's from the Bronx. He's from Co-op City. He came down and he did that for a couple of months. And one time, Gorilla Monsoon having a show in Trenton, New Jersey. So he knew I knew guys. So he says, "Hey Johnny, I need a couple of guys. So maybe you could bring me a guy or two." So I figured, okay, this is a good chance. So I took it. I told him, meet me, come on down from the Bronx, meet me in the Lancy Street. Pedro Morales was driving that night. So I said, Pedro, are we going to take my boy with me? Sure, he picked me up in the Lancy Street downtown by close to Little Italy there. And I said, we're going to Trenton. So we're going to Trenton, and when I got to the dressing room, Gorilla Monsoon comes running and said, Johnny, you get me the guy? I said, sure, here it is. And he looks at him, he said, hey, how you doing? And what's your name? And then SD Jones goes, Ephraim Conrad. So Gorilla Monsoon is a comedian. And he goes, what the heck? What was that? Ephraim Conrad. So, you know, he's from Antigua or something like that. So he talks real quick, you know. He says, Johnny, what kind of wrestling name is that? I said, wait a minute, Gino, you asked me to bring you a guy. Here it is for special delivery. What the heck do you want? Huh? So he goes, special delivery Jones, and you're working with him 20 minute Broadway.
Wow.
Right off that the cuff like that.
That
way
was
go,
the beginning.
Gorilla. Way to go, Gorilla.
That's the beginning of SD special delivery Jones, and I broke him in the business.
There you go. Well,
and nobody that knows too. That well, shit because that everybody thinks that he was from Philadelphia,
right.
And they built him up in there. And I work with him, and I put him over, and everybody thinks that, wow, SD Jones is great. I'm the one that broke him in the business.
Johnny, it's not an easy question.
And we gave him his first, and we gave him the name too, huh?
I was just going to say, I want to switch gears a little bit. It's not an easy question, but being a legend in your home birthplace of Puerto Rico. What is Johnny Rod's opinion on the whole Bruiser Brody tragedy? If I can ask.
Well, that's not a big mystery. Well, quite a few years back, Carlos Colon and Victor Jovica and Victor Quiñone were the owners of the company. So at one time, Victor Quiñone, who was probably almost half of that company, because you remember Victor Quiñones?
I'm aware of the name.
Well, he was referee sometime for Bruno for Gorilla Monsoon, remember?
Yep.
And
Victor
he lived on
Victor Quiñones.
Yes, Victor Quiñones.
When you say
so
it,
Victor Quiñones was very friendly with Gino, and Gino brought him here. And
okay.
He let him stay at the house. Whatever storyline is there. But at one time, Victor owned practically half of Carlos Colon and Jovica's territory in Puerto Rico, because his mother died and left him a hotel and all kinds of money. So this guy had young. He had a lot of money. But by him getting out of the business and making money back, he starts selling 10% here, 10% there, 15% here. So Gino Gorilla Monsoon had 10%. Abdullah the Butcher had 10%. Bruce Bodhi had 10%. I don't know who else had 10, 15%. So all those guys with 10% and all that, to Vito Quiñone, they were part of the game of the company.
Right.
So if you got 10% and I have 10%, I'm not your boss and you're not my boss. We're equal, right?
Mm-hmm. In premise,
okay.
Yes. In premise,
so now yes. Here's what happened. There was, according to the storyline that I hear, is that Jose Gonzalez has 10% and Bruiser Brody got 10%. And like I said, all the guys have 10%. They're equal. They nobody could tell nobody else above because they're the same. They have the same amount of bosses. But somehow there was an argument or put over where Gonzalez tries to tell him how to do things because he thinks he's bigger than the other guy. And they had a little spouse going on. But according to what I know, the guy must have put a knife in a towel and went into the dressing room shower where nobody's around. And freaking, according to what they say, they stab him in the groin. And by the time they bring the ambulance, the guy bled to death. And then the only guy that was there that we know for sure was
Tony Atlas.
Tony Atlas.
Tony Atlas, yes. And then Tony Atlas know the same thing, storyline that everybody else know because he wasn't in the shower. He was in the dressing room, but he knows he was there the night that it happened. And by the time the ambulance come and took him to the hospital, the guy bled to death. And that's the legit thing. What storyline they gave the police or the investigator, who the heck knows? And that's about it. Nobody knows anything else. They put a cover on that baby, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Johnny,
nobody knows nothing. Johnny. Nobody get accused. Nobody of nothing because it happened. Now they really didn't. They have the power. You know what I'm saying? Mm.
Did you go work Puerto Rico? After that happened, or no?
No. Once I leave a territory, and they play with my respect, I don't go.
Gotcha. So Johnny,
They wanted me to go back, but if I go back, then I'm going to have my cousin cut a couple of beesholes, you know?
There you go.
You mentioned running with Andre the Giant. Can you tell us an Andre the Giant story?
Uh-oh.
What about Andre?
Do you have a story that between you and him that tickled your fancy?
Well, I tell you what, you saw my wife, right?
Yes.
Yes.
She's 65 years old now, going on 66. When she was 21 and 22 years old, and when that's the beginning of my life, because I was married first for 15 years. Remember, I told you that I was in California, and the reason why I left because I came home to get divorced because I was having problems. That's the reason why I left California.
Okay.
More likely because I wasn't doing too good with the home stuff, you know. But what happens now is that as soon as I came home, and by the end of 76 and the beginning of 77, I bump into this young lady. I don't know. God must have done that because I had no involvement on being with no woman or nothing. You know, you got your own problem. You just want to mind your business, and we were having problems, and it was down the street. And my son was 15 years old. My oldest son, he's 59 years old now. My daughter's up in the right behind him, and those were my two first kids from my first marriage, which I was for 15 years married. And in 76, I wound up getting divorced at the end of by the 77. And then I went to the garden, and I bumped into to this young lady here, and out of the blue. I mean, she wasn't even a wrestling fan. She went there to see for the second time wrestling at the garden because a friend was she was following wrestling and she gave her a ticket the first time, and the second time she bought a ticket, and they were looking for her friend, and she bumped against me at the hotel, me dropping dropping Cicluna down from the garden, driving them down to 50th Street to the Howard Johnson Hotel. And by the time I drank a couple of beers and went into the bathroom and come out in the hallway, I bump into her. I can't tell you the real story, because if I tell you the real story, you're not going to believe it, and it's a fantasy. It happens. If God knows what he's doing. I bumped into her, and she's looking for her friend. Her friend came in and got an autograph, walked out the other door, and she left them in the hallway looking for her. And I come out of the bathroom, I bump into her, the rest was history. Okay, that's a long, long story. That's 40, it's going to be 47 years ago. And the funny part about it is that that after a while, and she's with me for a while, for 4 years before we got married. And then we go to the pub, and, you know, I'm good friends with Andre, because Andre and I, we hang out, me, Cicluna, Andre, Danucci, Arnold Scollin. We spend a lot of nights, you know, traveling and hanging out, and we were buddies. And I go to the pub with her, and Andre's there, and he wants to play ping pong with the machine. And she loves to play that, you know, the ball that you hit it and it goes all over the place, the little ball. Well, he'll pick up the machine with his hand, and then and instead of using the thing, and he's bouncing around, and she's fighting with him. And, well, but Andre, that's not fair. You're not supposed to pick up the machine and have the little ball run all over the thing so to get your thing. And then he used to have a lot of fun doing that. Because we were buddies, and we had nothing to lose. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but don't play pinball with Andre.
Don't play pinball with Andre. Cheats.
Yeah, but no, but he was just laughing and joking and having fun with her. And my wife is a sweetheart. She's friendly with everybody. She's not that's the way she is. That's why I wanted her to say hello to you guys.
You lucked out.
The funny part about it is that time went on. He slept them on a basement apartment that I had in Queens, because he went to the airport and dropped his girlfriend. He wanted me to pick him up so we could go in. I picked him up, and he didn't sleep all night. He got drunk and then come over. He said, "Johnny, it's 2:00 and I sleep. We're going to Staten Island to have a show." And he says, "Can I lay down?" And he's laying down and burping, farting, and you know, Andre was a regular man, you know what I mean?
How'd you get him into the basement apartment?
Only that he was the real giant.
Hey, how'd you fit him into the basement apartment? It's kind of big.
Because because he was a friend. I had a basement apartment. He had to walk down backwards.
Okay.
You know, he was we're regulars. We got nothing to do. And I told you that this is a real McCoy. The girl that invited my wife when they were kids, friends, you know, the age of 21 and 22. The girl that was a wrestling fan and invited my wife. They were friends from kindergarten in Brooklyn. From little girls, and when they grew up at that age, they were still friends. And she invited her because she had extra tickets. The first time she got a ticket, the second time she bought her own, and that's when I met my wife for the first time. But that girl that we're talking about is Nancy Argentino, the girl that had the problem with the snooker.
I was going to ask you.
I was going to ask you about that.
Do you know anything about that story?
I just told you there's nothing else to ask. That's the girl.
Did you?
And the reason. And I had nothing to do with introducing her to snooker or my wife or anything. Had nothing to do with it. That was their own meeting. There is no connection with us except that was her friend from child.
But how did your wife handle the unfortunate passing?
Nothing. I don't handle. I'm a pro.
Once
I met my wife, and she was with me, I said there is a separation. She goes her way, and you come in my way. You could always call and say hello, but then there is no hanging in the scenery. You know what I mean?
I got you.
I was born in the hills of Puerto Rico and raised downtown in Little Italy, and I'm a real McCoy, and I do things before it happens. You understand?
Yeah.
How hard was it for you to share a locker room with Snooker after that?
Well, no, it has no. Why should we have any problems? It's got nothing to do. There is nothing to do with what our It's not in my business. You understand?
Okay. No, but Johnny, let me ask you. She was a friend of your wife for
her whole life.
Wasn't your wife upset over this at all?
Yes, but you don't understand. That's what I'm trying to tell you. When shit like that happened, and you have nothing to do with it, yes, you feel bad. But then after that, you don't have to be doing anything because there's nothing you could do. What is it that you could do?
Right.
You can't do anything.
Johnny, how about one of my
one of my favorites growing up was Quick Draw. And
us talking about it now, it makes no. And it's just a history written or thing that happened. I just said it because they made films out of it. They talk about it. They say that the sister said that me and Ellen, my wife, introduced Hart to them, and that's not true. It was the opposite. I just told you how it happened. My wife is because she had extra tickets and her friend didn't go. My wife was never a wrestling fan.
Right.
She likes boxing. She likes basketball, but she don't like. She never had nothing to do as a kid. As a growing up with her, she never had nothing to do with wrestling. She was invited. She liked it in the garden for the first time. They were friends, so she bought a ticket for the second time just to go enjoy herself. But she wound up bumping against me because she was looking for her friend. God put us together. We've been almost 47 years. We had two kids. We had a girl and a boy. My wife is a twin. She has a twin sister. Today, our son has a twin kids. And then the sister has a girl and a boy. So you see, we have a family, my wife and I. We created a big family.
Johnny, if I can ask about, you do have connections to Arnold Skolin in the past. At one point, one of my favorites from back in the day, Rick McGraw, was actually being taken to the ring by Arnold. What happened with Rick McGraw? Why did he never get over?
Quick Draw McGraw. It wasn't too Quick Draw. That guy.
What went wrong there?
Not a bad guy. He wasn't a bad guy or anything like that. He was delusional in the sense that that he came from I don't know Carolina, Florida, whatever the fuck he comes from, and he was supposed to be state amateur champion in wrestling, and he was bench press. I don't know how many pounds and all that bullshit. He was only about 5'10", 5'9", and he thought he was a gorilla, and when he rolled in the ring, and they tried to put him over, but he thought he's Kingpin, and they put him with me. He didn't know how to get over, so every time they put him with me, he was always trying to go behind me and shit, so I showed him that you don't go behind me because you can wind up being a kangaroo, a raccoon, and after a while, they put him with this guy and they put him with that guy, tag team in here. They even tag team him with Andre the Giant to see if he gets over.
Right.
He fucking never got over. He was too proud to be in the ring. And the last time I worked with him, they put him in Torrington, Connecticut, and they had a sellout in a high school somewhere. And Arnold Skolin says, Johnny, you and McGraw go and give me 20-minute Broadway. And he asked, he quickly asked Skolin, did you say 20-minute Broadway? And Skolin says, what's the matter? Your ears are plugged? Yeah, I want 20-minute Broadway. Me? He said 20-minute Broadway. I said, okay, no problem. You got it, baby. I don't have a problem. But he questioned this because he thought they were going to put him over. Well, he was pissed. He went in the ring and wanted to go behind me. I gave him the beating of his wrestling career because there was no TV. So, and all the boys watch. And I have no problem doing that because he's I think he was Carolina State wrestling champion. And I don't have no record nowhere about being no wrestling champion. All I know is you don't go behind me and get away with it and try to make me look like a jerk because I don't know how to wrestle. All I know is that they taught me how to defend myself. So, and I'm proud to be saying that in the years in the beginning, around 1963 or whatever the fuck it was, or 65 or 67, whatever. Remember Carl Gotch when he was in New York with Rene Goulet doing the tag team?
And Rene Goulet, of course.
And Rene Goulet, of course.
Well, Carl Gotch, who's a good shooter, and Victor Rivera and myself and Frank Martinez and Gypsy Joe, we used to go to Brooklyn, and boy, that we trained with Carl Gotch. So Carl Gotch teached me, I would say they were close to a half a year, at least one day a week or 2 days a week that we got together in Brooklyn because we only had like an hour. And I took an interest in learning how to make somebody look stupid in the ring and don't look like I did it. You know what I mean? So he learned, but you see, it has nothing to do with me doing that. He's dead. The guy is dead. He didn't learn how to take care of himself. I don't know how he died, but they found him dead.
Right.
You know, Johnny.
You know about that, Johnny, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't even know where they found him, but he was supposed to be dead in some hotel room or something. Why? I don't know.
He was taking
maybe he was taking steroids. I have no idea.
Probably.
And I have nothing bad to say. All I know is that he wasn't my, he wasn't a guy that I could go in the ring and be proud to have a match like I used to have with Rick Martel. Rick Martel is one of the best baby face workers that I ever worked with.
He's great.
Nice.
We love Martel.
So I could close my eyes and have a hell of a match with Rick Martel without any problem. Tony Gurria. I could go in the ring and with no finishes, no nothing, and have a hell of a tear the house down with Tony Gurria. Well, a hell of a worker, a good guy. Never complain about nothing.
Let me ask you this: Kevin Von Erich, you tested Kevin Von Erich in the garden. How was Kevin Von Erich?
Listen. Kevin Von Erich, he was a young guy, very young. Amateur wrestler. The family has the money. Father's a promoter. They go over a lot in that territory, but they send him to New York. They give him a tryout. Vince probably want to use him, but they always want to test him first. Even whether they put you on TV or regular house or the Madison Square Garden was the best way to test. Vince asked me, can you do 15, 20 minutes with him and get him over somehow? Of course, Vince, no problem. Why not? I love Vince. Whatever he wants, I don't care. The funny thing about it is I go in there, and as soon as I go, the guy wants to hit me in the head, he wants to slap me around. He's working, but he's hitting me in the head. He has no respect of the regular entertainment or the regular challenge. He's treating me like I'm here. I'm ready to smack you all over the place. And then he's trying to do all kinds of high spots about wrestling or something. Well, he learned a lesson real quick, and he went over, but the match was the shits, and I don't know if you guys seen it, but
I have.
And then that's not a match. That's not the kind of match I want. I want you to get over, and then and by the time they announced his name, he was gone. He disappeared. So you wasn't proud enough to be in the garden with me. I'm not supposed to be somebody that you could be proud enough to wrestle. You're a schmuck. You just started. But that's okay because I didn't lose no weight over that. I guess what? Now that we're talking about Von Erich, did you know that I just finished training McConnelly Holtz? He's a movie star who was in on TV with that series, Chicago Police, McConnelly Holtz. If you Google the name McConnelly Holtz. He's a movie star that I just finished training, and he's doing the movie Fix Von Erich the Father. Oh. I trained him for him to do the claw.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
The Iron Claw, yep. Right?
The Iron movie. Claw, right?
Yeah. I'm the guy that trained McConnelly Holtz, the main guy, which is McConnelly Holtz. He's doing the father. He's the father on the movie. And I don't know who's going to be Kevin because Kevin's alive. Remember, the other four kids die.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a new movie coming out. And I just finished a couple of weeks back. I finished McConaughey. He's he looks like Von Erich, but he don't know nothing about wrestling. But I took him for a couple of months, and I did it at the gym.
Well, Johnny. Anybody that grew up in the Northeast knows that you're an icon. And everybody knows that if it wasn't for Johnny Rods, it wouldn't be the Pharaoh's favorite federation. There would be no ECW. Did you know you were training all these superstars?
Isn't that something? Right?
Damn.
That's true. It won't be because when Paul Heyman was young, very young, and we're going back. He was a kid. He's still a kid, maybe 17, 18, 19, 20, I don't know. He was around, and he was kissing ass all over the place because, you know, he wanted to be involved in the wrestling business. He's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. He just wants to be in the business. And then he just wanted to do whatever he had to do. He'd be driving the band for Mr. Fuji. And Mr. Fuji will use him like a slave. Come on, brother. We're going to go up north, and you're going to be the driver. So, you know, he's going to drive. It'll be me and Hans Colin and Andre the Giant. And who's the driver? Paul. He be driving. And whether I sit and be co-pilot, whether Mr. Fuji be co-pilot. And then he make this guy drive, and we're going down the miles and miles, and then he said, pull over, and we're going to do a couple of squats in the parking lot and so you could wake up and drive again. That's how he started, you know. He wanted to be in the business, so he did his duties. And then Paul Heyman wanted me to go with him in Philadelphia and bring the boys and then be a booker or work with him and build a company that he wanted to build, and he was nobody. And the father gave him some money so he could do a little Mickey Mouse TV, and you know how it started. And then blink, blink, blink. I said, no, I don't. I have a job, and I only do this 2 days a week at Gleason's. I says, I could give you the boys. I can take all the boys you want. And at the Kevin Sullivan came around and started hanging around a little bit, trying to get some boys, and I let them all go. Bill DeMar, Taz, all those guys, you know, Damien Demento, and anybody that the Twin Towers, all those guys. So I let them go, do a little bit independent with them, you know. I didn't care because I only did 2 days a week at Gleason's gym from 2 to 8. The rest I was doing the newspaper job, and I wasn't going to leave that. Well, that's my union job. So I didn't want to go with him. I could have gone with him and be probably partners. Who knows? That's how it started. And then Tommy, Dick, and Harry started coming in for him, you know. And he gave $1,000 to come and work with us, a Funk Jr., with the other guy. And the other guy, he kept doing it. And it was cheap to do the bingo hall in Philadelphia. That was a rat hall, you know, with rats around. But it's an arena, and they built it. They built it by doing, you know what the crowd was. Holy shit! Holy shit!
Yep.
And then that got over with all these hoodlums that want to see that kind of game. And before you know, the only reason why ECW is still mentioning, I bet you guys don't even know why.
Why?
Why?
Why? Because remember, here's what happened. The game is clean. The game is top. The game is on pay-per-view by Vince McMahon and the big shots. Here comes ECW, where it's nothing but a rat hole, and everybody's cursing, and everybody's hitting people with the bob lights, you know.
Garbage can,
their chairs, they're cutting everybody. They cursing like crazy, and then the big shots, the ones with the big power, don't want the government, well, let me put it this way. Say some kid sees somebody hit with one of those bulb lights, you know, those fluorescent lights, and break it over their head. Say some kid decided to take a bulb and then hit some other kid in the head, and then the government will come out and say, we have to ban wrestling from this shit. So what happens is, it gives pro wrestling a bad name to the shit guy and to Vince McMahon. So Vince McMahon decided, you know what? Let me make this guy an offer he can't refuse, in the sense of buying the junky name, make a program on TV that looks like ECW, but they're not doing the same shit. And after a while, you know, today we don't have an ECW program, right?
Right.
Right.
So Vince figured that's the only way to kill him, you know, buy him out, give him a job. They do like the mafia. The mafia gives the guy that makes a noise, gives him a job so they can keep an eye on him, and that's it. And if he follows the order, he stays. If he don't follow the order, they'll squash him. But right now, he's been there. He made nothing but money. He became kingpin of the game. He's not the boss, but he's involved until he die.
Right. Yep.
And the same thing with the king, Lola. That's one of the biggest territory in the wrestling business.
Yeah.
Those guys are the king of the wrestling business. They go back with the Ron Fuller, the grandfather of Ron Fuller and the great-great-grandfather. They go back to the McCaws and the Hutfields in the sense of doing pro wrestling. They're the real McCoys of pro wrestling territorial building up. Tennessee, are you kidding me? Actually, more than whatever, Vince happened to have the garden and he became kingpin, but the Tennessee is one of the biggest territories in wrestling build-up, games of all kinds. You know that.
Why do you think Vince Sr. Did not take Andy Kaufman in
and do nothing because he's a Mickey Mouse comedian. It's already dead. It's a one-time high spot, and only Kaufman gets built up. It doesn't build the wrestling business up.
So you think when he went to Memphis, that didn't help wrestling?
Nah.
The exposure on the David Letterman show?
Look, it's a flash. Okay, I'll give you what a flash is.
Okay.
Who's the biggest wrestler in India?
Oh, I know where he's going.
I know where he's going.
Kali?
Yeah, Great
Kali. Who's the biggest wrestler in India?
Great Kali, right?
Great Kali, right?
Okay, Great Kali. Is Great Kali, are you a fan of Great Kali?
No. I never was.
Because if you're a fan of Great Kali, I'm going to shut this phone down.
No, I'm not.
Nope, the line stays open.
You know why? You know why I ask you that? Great Kali, I'm not mad at him. I have nothing to do with him. I don't even know the guy. He probably doesn't even know who Johnny Ross is. But here's what happened.
He should.
I'd rather work with Andre the Giant every night, 7 days a week, twice a week, than work with Jake the Kali one time, because he's not a fucking wrestler. He just stands there like a big guy moving his hand, and he can't even walk. He's a freak of nature, but he's a human being, freak of nature. And then Vince, who's a moneymaker, decided, wow, we found this guy in India. Let's make him an icon here in the wrestling. They went to India and they made nothing but money, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Right. That's what he did. They went to Arabia. They put a fucking guy there. They made him look like he's the kingpin. And they had the red carpet. And the prices were outrageous.
Yeah.
But this is how Vince makes money. Why not? But Great Khali is not a pro wrestler. What the heck is he pro wrestler about? He doesn't know how to get off the floor.
Good points, Johnny.
Not Andre. Andre was a wrestler, a professional wrestler.
Gotcha, and Andre
Johnny. Me and Andre could wrestle each other. He doesn't need two guys to wrestle. He can wrestle just me and him. And I wrestle Andre. When they put me and Jose Estrada wrestle Andre two against one, he'll throw Jose through the ropes And then he starts bullshitting with me. I know how to work with Andre. Whether Jose wants to work with him and knows how to work with him, that's it. And Jose is a good man. Jose is my partner. Jose is my compa. He baptized my daughter.
Oh,
okay,
nice.
So he's my compadre. Nice. I've got nothing to say about Jose, but Jose is not the same worker as I am. I don't care what he believes in. I don't give a shit if he knows how to drop kick better than me. That's not what it's all about. He's my boy. I helped him in the business. I went to Puerto Rico. I did the Super Medic with him. We tore the house down. We were the hottest thing there and still the hottest thing there. They never had another pair of Super Medic like us. All because... I'm going to say now, I'm going to put my on my shoulder, all because Johnny Ross left, the medics were done. They can never bring another one to build it up. So that proves the point what I could do with a mask.
Well, Johnny, I want
and
to
I'm not sure, I'm not I'm not bragging. I'm not bragging. To hell with bragging. I could still go in the ring and I could go with you in the ring and have a match.
Johnny, you killed me.
And wait a minute, Michael, and I would put you over like $1 million.
Johnny, I want to thank you for taking the time.
As a matter of fact, nobody's going to believe it. Say, Michael just knocked Johnny Ross out. He tried to get up, and he was dizzy. And then people won't believe it. Shit, yes.
I gave him the foreign object.
That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
Well, what it's all about is, Johnny, we want to thank you for joining us. This could go on for 4 hours. You are an icon. I'm lost for words for what you've done for this industry, what you've done for its fans. All I could say is thank you.
Well, I guess we're disappearing because I hear the voice and... we could do this again. We haven't talked about nothing yet.
I would love to have a part two. If you're willing to do it, let's do it.
Anytime you want, Michael. I don't have a problem. I enjoy this. Listen, we didn't do nothing wrong. I got, I don't know if you can see my logo. You see my logo?
I see it.
I see it.
That's the World of Unpredictable Wrestling. There's two W's and a U.
Nice.
And I drew that. And it was a design. And it's on Gleason's Gym here in Dumbo in Brooklyn in 131 Water Street. And anybody who wants to really break into the business, come to see me at Gleason's Gym here in Dumbo, Brooklyn. And then Google my name and they'll cut it. And then they got to come ready to kill because it's not easy. It's the real McCoy. You want it, you come. I don't call myself a wrestling school. I have a World Unpredictable Club of Pro Wrestling. I don't believe in wrestling. I believe in wrestling clubs, but where everybody's a member, everybody helps everybody. You can sweep the ring and you don't have to be ashamed. That's the name of the game. So, Michael, Monte, and what's the other gentleman?
Jimmy Farrow.
Jimmy, you guys are good guys. Anytime you want me back, just mention. Next time we do it, I'm gonna ask my daughter. Give me your phone, and we'll snap the finger away because I want to see you guys' faces instead of just mine. Okay.
Beautiful.
There you go.
Beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen.
Lots of blessing. I hope you guys make a killing. I hope you continue, and we could do more. And I could. It's no big deal. You know what I mean?
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Johnny. Great job.
I have a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with you guys. It was short. I'm sorry that we had problem getting it on. Maybe it's the, I don't know. This is not the first time. It happened with Jerry Briscoe, too.
There'll be a sequel.
We'll have a sequel.
Yes, anytime you want. Just mention it and we do it.
The great Johnny Rods. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Johnny.
The great Johnny Rods, bud.
That was great.
Can't beat that.
A little unpredictable, but
I had to get
you know I had to do it, so I did it. Okay, it's gone now.
Let me tell you something. I feel better now.
No, it was good.
Backlund, Johnny Rods. Very simple. Simple enough.
I'm waiting for Frank Williams to descend from the rafters.
And he didn't. I don't think he hit anything.
No.
I mean, I think Jay Will said that he thought he was hiding. He knew more about the Brody thing. I don't think so.
No, not the least.
I think he said, hey, this is what I think I heard happen.
This is what he thinks.
Looks like it didn't shock him.
No. No, it didn't. I wonder if, though, it did put a big dark shadow over Puerto Rican wrestling in general. I mean, it still has to this day. We're still talking about this. But I guess,
it's one of the biggest things.
It is.
Well, anyway, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Thank you. Tomorrow, Ken Patera. This is Mike Monty.
This is the Pharaoh. And until tomorrow, with the world's strongest man, at least that's what he was during back in the day, one of the greatest intercontinental champions of all time, Ken Patera. Later.